Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement.
American dungeons release two anti-imperialist women. Rumia Abu-Jamal condemns black politicians for selling out black revolutionary Assata Shakur. A New York prisoner explains life in a prison cell.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
Anti-imperialist Laura Whitehorn was released from prison in August, and Sylvia Baraldini was transferred to her native Italy later in the month. These women, along with hundreds of other revolutionaries still incarcerated, were imprisoned for their political opposition to America's imperialist rampaging. These women were punished for their participation in the struggle for justice. While America attempts to push public opinion toward the violation of human rights in other countries, America continues to assassinate, incarcerate, and brutalize people within the belly of the beast who oppose oppression. Laura Whitehorn was initially arrested in 1985 and was sentenced to 23 years. Whitehorn was one of the defendants in the resistance conspiracy case, charged with, quote, conspiracy to oppose, protest, and change the policies and practices of the United States government in domestic and international matters by violence and illegal means. Sylvia Baraldini, also a revolutionary anti-imperialist incarcerated for her political beliefs and alleged roles in political actions, has finally been returned to Italy. Among the things Sylvia is accused of is raiding in the escape of Black Liberation Army leader Assata Shakur. Assata now lives in exile in Cuba. America's incarceration and inhumane treatment of Sylvia is due to her involvement with revolutionary struggle, not because of the crimes she was convicted of. Sylvia was never convicted of carrying out any violent acts or harming other people. Many of our readers may be familiar with the Sylvia Baraldini from the video Through the Wire about the first control unit prison for women in Lexington, Kentucky. MIM has had several events at which the video was shown to raise awareness regarding the treatment of incarcerated revolutionaries. Sylvia Baraldini was incarcerated along with Puerto Rican revolutionary Alejandrina Torres and anti-imperialist Susan Rosenberg at the Lexington Control Unit explicitly to break their political will. The women were subject to small group isolation and sensory deprivation. The other control tactics like constant video surveillance, unnecessary strip searches, cavity probes, and constant fluorescent lighting in the basement dungeon for nearly 2 years. The women also were denied adequate medical care that resulted in Baraldini's health declining severely as cancer developed. The control unit was closed down as a result of consistent outside opposition to the inhumane, Nazi-like experiment. Sylvia has been imprisoned since 1993. 5 times since 1989, Sylvia and the Italian government have requested she be returned to Italy under a treaty that allows prisoners convicted abroad to serve their sentences at home. Each time, America said no, fearing that this leader of the people would not be adequately tortured by the Italian prison system. But Italian anger toward America grew after a U.S. Marine jet killed 20 people as it sliced through a gondola cable at an Italian ski resort in February of 1998. Increased Italian protest helped to pressure the United States to allow Sylvia to return. Sylvia Baraldini's transfer will not bring back the 20 Italians murdered by the U.S. Marines, and it does not absolve America from its imperialist crimes. However, taking advantage of the mistake of our enemies, the revolutionary forces can sometimes win small victories while building strength to take on the larger battles. In an amazing violation of Italian sovereignty, the United States has the right to determine Sylvia's prison conditions in Italy until her sentence ends in the year 2008. The agreement does deny Sylvia the right to medical care outside of the prison, despite her ongoing struggle against cancer. MIM has long called all prisoners political prisoners in recognition of the political system that chooses who goes to prison and who does not. But we also recognize the importance of the fight for freedom of political leaders incarcerated explicitly for their political beliefs and actions. Their incarceration weakens the movement as a whole by taking them off the streets, as well as institutionalizing the punishment of people for their ideas alone. We celebrate the release of Whitehorn and the transfer of Baraldini. We urge people to become active to continue the strike for the release of political active prisoners. justice for all prisoners, and ultimately for proletarian revolution. Proletarian revolution must continue to be our long-term goal. It is the only means through which all lawmaking and enforcement are conducted in the interests of the oppressed people for justice.
Selling Out Asada by Mumia Abu-Jamal. Each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. Franz Fanon, The Wretched of the Earth, 1966. On September 14th, 1998, the House of Representatives passed a resolution, HCR 254, calling on the Cuban government to return former black political prisoner Asada Shakur. What makes this resolution remarkable, other than its obvious political hypocrisy, is the action, or lack of action, taken by black politicians in the House. There is something sickening about black congresspersons swarming to the defense of President Clinton, who has built his political career on the skillful manipulation and timely betrayal of black interest to appeal to his party's and the majority party's right-wing, so-called centrist, while selling out one of black America's most celebrated and respected fighters for black liberation. Asada Shakur, as a member of the Black Panther Party, and later as a member of the Black Liberation Army, fought for the freedom of black people in the streets, in the prisons, and later in the free liberated territory of America, in Cuba, as a proud and beautiful soldier for her people. That any black politicians could dare condemn her for fighting for her freedom against the most racist, conspiratorial, and deadly attacks in black contemporary history is an obscenity. In the House bill, which refers to her by her slave name, Joanne Chesimard, the resolution writers claim she killed a New Jersey state trooper on May 2, 1973, along with two friends. The resolution does not begin to tell the truth, that Asada and her two companions were ambushed by state troopers who were bent on killing several known Black Panthers, and that they indeed succeeded in killing one and almost mortally wounding her. Deputy Minister of Information, Zayed Malik Shakur, was murdered by the state on that day, and Asada, his protege, was almost murdered, beaten, thrown into a morgue alongside of her brother Zayed, and later charged with killing him. She was railroaded in a trial that is known by legal scholars as a miscarriage, and thrown into a hellhole where she was the only woman in the entire prison. The only justice she has ever received was her liberation from a state dungeon in 1979. If one examines the signers of the resolution, it is striking to find the names of such black politicians as John Conyers, Sheila Jackson Lee, Jesse Jackson Jr., Chaka Fatah, Cynthia McKinney, Carrie Meek, and the like. Mercifully, Alcee Hastings, John Lewis, and Bobby Rush abstained from voting. Have any of these members of the Congressional Black Caucus read Asada? Have any of the Congressional Black Caucus's lawyer members ever read Evelyn Williams' Inadmissible Evidence? If they had, there is no way they could have signed on to such a damnable congressional resolution. Asada has rightly condemned this dastardly act as a contemporary latter-day fugitive slave law. In 1850, Congress passed the Fugitive Slave Act, which meant In the words of early black nationalist Martin R. Delaney, "By the provisions of this bill, the colored people of the United States are positively degraded beneath the level of the whites, are made liable at any time, in any place, and under all circumstances, to be arrested. And upon the claim of any white person, without the privilege even of making a defense, sent into endless bondage. Let no visionary nonsense about habeas corpus or a fair trial deceive us." Delaney was condemning an act that threatened the freedom of all blacks anywhere in the United States. Nearly 150 years later, and the U.S. empire seeks to expand its reach to the entire globe. The Congressional Black Caucus recently made much about their role of fairness cops in the congressional process leading up to impeachment for Clinton. As a wealthy, Yale-trained former law professor with millions at his disposal, not to mention the power of the presidency, he hardly seems to need their help. Instead, a black, courageous woman who must face the monstrous might of the empire has not a single defender in Congress. Like their hero, Clinton, they seem to have mastered the politics of betrayal. Written by Mumia Abu-Jamal.
In a prison cell. We live in a nation that promotes incarceration in order to purge its conscience of its incompetence to provide adequate social services to its inhabitants. America is guilty of destroying the cognitive abilities, skills, and talents of those incarcerated because of their inability to find an alternative to incarceration. For those who remain silent participants in the enslavement of others, for convenience sake, they are just as guilty as those spearheading the social tragedy. What is prison? Is it merely a place for the lawless? Or is it just a product of the ultimate backlash of minority suppression? Suppression of the weak, the helpless, the disenfranchised, or those simply needing a helping hand. Prison has become the victory cry of the masses, and of those entrusted with the responsibility of leading the masses into a productive millennium. It seems everywhere we look, we see people being sent to prison as a form of corrective surgery for the ills that plague society. Prison has become the panacea for society's woes. There are over 1 million men and women confined in America. The number exceeds the population of many third world countries. Strangely enough, a large percentage of this number are children. Children are forced to go through the rite of passage in a prison cell. Also, there's an inordinate amount of drugs used in prison. People terminated from their jobs forced to find relief from the tranquilizing effect of a euphoric high. Now they, too, are in a prison cell. Prison has become a nursery for the young, a retirement home for the old, a drug center for the addicted, a psychiatric ward for the mentally ill, a concentration camp for illegal aliens, a group home for adolescents, a brothel for the guards, a trophy for the politicians, a beacon of hope for the unemployed, and a massive industrial complex for the entrepreneur. Those who are trapped within its walls, prison is a catatonic form of schizophrenia which reduces its inhabitants to a zombie-like state. Prison is the only solution to every problem society is afraid or unwilling to confront. Its solution is found in a prison cell. In truth, prison is the new plantation, a new form of social genocide, a new form of ethnic cleansing. It is a new form of slavery that's all-inclusive in its scope. A quick glimpse of the prison cell is really a look at the residence of today's neo-slave. The prison cell is as small as a bathroom. There's usually one man or woman permitted to a cell. There's a row of cells that make up a tier. There's usually four tiers stacked upon each other for maximum occupancy, like a slave ship. The cell is constructed of steel. There's steel walls, steel toilets, steel sinks, and steel bars with a sliding steel gate. You live in this steel cage and experience a host of emotions that has nothing to do with rehabilitation. In truth, you feel raped, violated, victimized, and confused. These moments of emotional disorder add up to months, and the months into years, until you suffocate and slowly decay, all in a prison cell. The cell is too small for physical exercise. How can you exercise in a coffin? How can you exercise your mind while listening to the sounds of agony and despair from others like yourself? Time becomes your enemy and your friend. You await the recreational period, the sliding of the coffin lid, signifying a pseudo-escape from the trauma of being caged, only to return 3 hours later to once again endure hell, all in a prison cell. The bed in the cell is constructed of 5 pieces of cotton enclosed in a coarse cover. This piece of board is placed on a steel frame deemed fit by politicians for posture and perfect comfort. In the cell you sleep, you listen to music, and sometimes you eat. You read, you write, you cry, and occasionally you laugh. Something happens to the person in the cell. They lose themselves. They slowly become Frankenstein, looking for an opportunity to destroy their creator. Survival becomes paramount. Survival of the fittest is taken to the extreme, all in a prison cell, by a New York prisoner.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email radio@mim.org.